Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So, we are one cabinet minister down today after Andrea Leadsom quit the cabinet last night. And as of yet, Theresa May appears to be still in number 10 in position. Voters have gone to the polls in the European elections, and there's a sense that tomorrow, Friday, could be the day where Theresa May is forced to announce an exit date. James, what's the latest?
So, as I understand it, what will happen on Friday is that Graham Brady will go and see Theresa May. And when he goes to see Theresa May, he will have, don't laugh, a kind of sealed envelope with him. And what he will say to Theresa May is, would you like to name a date for your departure? And if she says no, he would then open the sealed envelope, which would essentially, even Theresa May's allies on the 2022 executive accept this, reveal that there is now a majority in favour of rule change, allowing an immediate vote of no confidence in her leadership when Parliament returns. For that reason, Theresa May will commit to resigning as Tory party leader when Parliament returns from the Whitsun recess. That would mean that she would carry on as Prime Minister while the contest took place, so she would still be Prime Minister during the Trump state visit, the D-Day commemorations, all of those kind of things. But the Tory party would get on with electing a new leader, with the aim of having it all done by the end of July.
Now, a lot of this, Fraser, rests on the idea that Theresa May is going to go without a fight and announce her exit date. Since yesterday, when she came under a lot of pressure to announce a date, she refused to see various cabinet ministers. And in her letter responding to Andrea Leadsom's resignation letter, she seemed to double down, insisting that her Brexit approach was a right approach, that she was going to focus on delivering that in response to Andrea Leadsom's criticisms. Do you think Theresa May is going to go without a fight?
Of course not. I mean, she will keep pushing on to the last. I mean, I gather she's still in this nothing has changed mode, thinking that she will just face it down. This is what she does in adversity every single time. And in her defence, this works. She just closes her eyes, closes her ears, and just keeps plodding on. And usually those trying to get rid of her screw up and she succeeds. But this time, I can't really see it working. The sealed envelope tactic that James mentions does have with it a timetable. It shows the guarantee that she would actually face an ignominious end with a vote from her party to get rid of her. And if she were to call her bluff, which she might do, then I think Graham Brady is ready to go ahead with this. They weren't ready last time. I think they are ready now. Now, she might think, well, there's a 1 in 4 chance that they aren't ready, that they'll somehow make a mess of it like they did a few months ago and try. But I think she'd be unwise to do so.
Two big things have changed to my mind. The first is, it used to be the people who wanted Theresa May gone were the people who were either very relaxed about or actively wanted to leave with no deal. What has now happened is, I would think the bulk of Tory MPs who want to leave with a deal now regard Theresa May as an impediment to getting that deal. And so that means that the numbers within the Conservative Party are now against her. And I mean, the other thing that's happened is, Cabinet realised that the association with this package is not just toxic for their leadership ambitions, but potentially toxic for the entire Cabinet. And that there is, I think, a kind of growing worry that if this isn't resolved soon, you know, you could end up with a new leader who basically not only doesn't come from the Cabinet, but basically says, right, I'm clearing out this entire Cabinet and replacing it with new people because they've all failed.
The other difference is that a few months ago, the leadership candidates weren't quite ready, and I think that they are ready now. You can see them limbering up on the starting line. I mean, we've had the parading of the wives, we've had all sorts of signs that they are actually ready to go and they're waiting for the starting gun. And I think that is a big difference. Before, it wasn't quite coordinated. It was like, oh, let's get rid of Theresa May. Oh, by the way, nobody's quite ready to succeed her. Now you do have at least 5 people, by some definitions, even 18, ready to start the wacky race to succeed her.
James, were Theresa May to refuse to play ball tomorrow when she meets with Graham Brady, what is the time frame in terms of how long it would take for the 1922 committee to change the rules for MPs to vote to push her out?
I think they have already changed the rules, if you see what I mean.
So but they could do it straight away?
No, because Parliament's in recess. So Theresa May would buy, you know, another week or so until Parliament returns from its Whitsun recess. And then I think that first day back, there would be a ballot of all Conservative MPs. And I think it is a safe assumption that she would not win that ballot. And I think, you know, why put yourself through that if you are Theresa May? It would be painful, it would be embarrassing, it would be humiliating. I
mean, that hasn't really stopped her from making decisions in the past.
And by the way, she's been through nothing but pain, embarrassment and humiliation over the last year and a bit.
Now, I agree, but I think this 22 thing is the thing that will make a difference. I was talking to one cabinet minister yesterday, he's one of the ones who's not actively trying to get her out, and he said, you know, his view was that if the entire pizza club turned up and said, we're all going to resign unless you go, Theresa May would say, I'm very sorry to lose you, and just carry on. But I think this rule change with this ballot, you know, that is a hard stop.
Now, one thing that has changed from Number 10's perspective is we were told yesterday that there would be the withdrawal agreement bill published on Friday and a debate would be scheduled for when MPs return from the recess. That doesn't appear to be happening anymore. In the business of the House, there was no mention of that. So, Fraser, when it comes to the withdrawal agreement, it seems as though Theresa May is on the way out. The withdrawal agreement has been panned widely. Mm. When it comes to those future leadership candidates and the contest, do you think we are going to see many of the candidates suggest that the withdrawal agreement is something they want to bring back and be voted on?
Certainly not Theresa May's withdrawal agreement. I think that she has now proven beyond any reasonable doubt that this Parliament will not pass that deal. It might pass something else, but not that particular one. So I think we can see Boris Johnson, who, by the way, is clearly out in front in the shadow leadership election, proposing something resembling the Kitts-Malthouse compromise they were discussing last time, because it did manage to unify various wings of the party. I can see other ideas being brought back. The Brady Amendment as well, that passed through Parliament. So whoever will come in will obviously have to say, I am going to go to Brussels and negotiate something a little bit different to what she voted. And the emphasis is on a little bit. It doesn't have to be hugely different. I think the two sides are far closer together than has been written up. The Brady Amendment is not that much. All it asks for is an exit clause to be written in the same way that the EU has granted exit clauses to so many of the deals it has granted in the past. And given that nobody expects the backstop to be permanent, it ought not to be much to ask. So that's one example of the many ways that this deal could be made, in essence, more acceptable to Parliament. What we don't know is whether under a new leader, Parliament might say, well, we were prepared to compromise with the Brady Amendment last time, but now we've got higher demands. So whatever changes, May's deal will be forgotten. That deal will not be brought back or passed by a new leader, but a variant of it might well do.
Now, talking of the Malthouse compromise, James, we are expecting many candidates to enter this race. There's some talk that the ultimate compromise candidate could indeed be Kit Malthouse. Is he someone that we expect might run?
I think Kit Malthouse is definitely making the preparations to run. He is trying to see what support he can have from MPs. I think the circumstances are quite difficult, though, for anyone who is not an established big beast candidate. If you become Prime Minister, you are going to be plunged straight away into a political crisis with very little time. And look, Kit Malthouse has a lot of political experience, but it is a massive leap to go from Minister of State for Housing to handling, you know, arguably the biggest peacetime British political crisis we've seen this century. So, I mean,
even if they have the managed no deal strategy named after them.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think it's also, so I think that is tricky. And I personally think that there will be a lot of pressure on some of these candidates not to put themselves forward. And I mean, you know, one of my favourite little facts about Tory leadership contests is no one has ever become leader of a Conservative Party having run for the job before. And I think that will be pointed out to quite a lot of people. But I don't think that will be enough to deter some people, because I think there will be a broader sense that the current political cabinet have not covered themselves in glory, and so you need fresh blood and a change of pace. But I think one of the other things to watch, again, which is going to affect the dynamic of this contest, is where do the candidates who get knocked out go? And, you know, if you see that there are essentially two sides to this draw, right, there's the Brexiteer side, the kind of the hard Brexiteer side, you could say, which is essentially between Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab. And then there is a kind of more establishment lane, which is, I think, really between kind of, you know, Hunt, Gove, Javid, Hancock, Stewart, right? I think in that lane, what is very interesting is, I think Jeremy Hunt definitely starts at the front. But I think the hope for Gove and to a lesser extent Javid is they're more likely to pick up from the people who drop out. You know, where would you expect Matt Hancock and Roy Stewart to go if they didn't have the numbers to carry on in this contest? You would expect them to end up going towards Michael Gove. So I think you will see a very interesting dynamic on that side of the draw.
Yeah. And we've had Johnny Mercer, who has today declared on Twitter that he is not yet, in his words, ready to become Prime Minister. So he's going to roll in behind Boris Johnson, as people basically said he was going to do all along. So if the timetable is as you suggest, James, and she's going to lay out her departure terms tomorrow, then I think we will be able to see this consolidation out of this long, wide list of candidates. There's a big question right now as to whether there should be joint tickets or not, and whether Boris Johnson would need a joint ticket. The argument is that he wouldn't because he's a whole candidate, whereas the others are half people, that nobody's quite heard of Dominic Raab, so he'll need Jeremy Hunt, who's nobody's half heard of either, to make a... I mean, there are unkind analogies being drawn here, but I think we can start to see these alliances. And the thorny question as to whether any leader should, prospective leader, should be making promises at this stage. We had a ticket last time. It was a Sacha Javid, Stephen Crabbe joint ticket. Didn't go very far. It's a bit strange. We don't have a presidential system in this country, and we don't tend to have two people running together. And the ones who tend to win leadership elections are normally the ones who say, I'm not making any promises to anybody, whether it's true or not. So that would be one of the many things to look at when we start to see what form this contest is going to have.
And finally, we have news just in that Mel Stride has been appointed as Andrea Leadsom's successor as leader of the House. James, how long do you think he'll be in this job for?
You're asking essentially whether the new Prime Minister will keep him on or not.
Yeah.
I think he's a relatively round peg in a round hole. He's regarded as kind of... He is kind of one of these people sent out regularly when the Treasury have something rather difficult to deal with an urgent question on. That's his skill set. It's also interesting in that he is essentially running the Michael Gove leadership campaign, and Michael Gove has stayed in the Cabinet, and now his chap gets this bump up. But I also think Mel Stride is also very close to Gavin Barwell, the Prime Minister's chief of staff, and I wonder if this is, you know, a final act of towards a friend before they prepare to clear out of the building.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe on the iTunes store or another medium, or get in touch with us directly on our new exciting email address, podcast@spectator.co.uk. We're enjoying reading all your feedback, even if some of it isn't entirely complimentary.